ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
I'm David Marr, host of Late Night Live on Radio National.
Very suave, erudite kind of guy.
We're here to surprise, delight, and maybe enrage you from time to time. We go where our curiosity leads.
Let's talk crazy. Let's act crazy. Let's be crazy, because then the enemy doesn't know what you're thinking.
Late Night Live, four new shows a week on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
So concerned was the Reserve Bank when inflation hit 3.8% that it whacked up interest rates twice in February and March. But the latest figures just out, the first since the US attack on Iran, show inflation much, much higher at 4.6%. Inflation hasn't climbed that high since the explosion in prices as Australia roared out of the COVID lockdowns in 2022, an explosion that produced 10 consecutive rate hikes. And before then, inflation has scarcely been that high at all. Not for the best part of 30 years. How bad is it really? Is it set to get a good deal worse? And does the Reserve Bank have the stomach to inflict the kind of damage it might need to knock inflation back down to something like where it used to be? Welcome to The Economy Stupid on ABC Radio National with me, Peter Martin, and my guest this week, two people paid to examine inflation, the detail of the figures and the Reserve Bank's likely response. It meets next week. Deanna Messina, who's done this for 15 years, first at the Commonwealth Bank and then at the AMP, where she's currently Deputy Chief Economist, and David Bassanese, who's followed closely the thinking of the Reserve Bank at the Macquarie Bank, the Commonwealth Treasury, and the Australian Financial Review, and is now Chief Economist at BetaShares, where he's been right about what the bank will do. At times, others have been wrong. Welcome, Deanna, and welcome back, David.
Great to be with you.
Thanks so much for having us, Peter.
Deanna, these figures just out cover the month of March, and conveniently, the US began its strikes against Iran on the 28th of February, the last day of February. This means they show the full impact of the first month of the war. What do they tell us happened?
What we saw from the numbers is that higher petrol and diesel prices added about 1.1 percentage points to inflation in March. If the war never happened, then annual inflation would be more like 3.4% rather than the level of 4.6%. But what's important here is that this number doesn't show any flow-on impacts to other parts of the economy from rising petrol prices or rising oil prices. Oil has a lot of byproducts in things like fertilizers, so the use in agriculture, in other parts of transportation that can flow through to services industries. But that's still coming in the next few months' worth of inflation figures.
We do know, though, how much petrol prices increased in 1 month, petrol and diesel. How much was it?
That increased by 33% in 1 month. The issue, though, is that we thought we had a ceasefire. Now we're not really sure. The resumption of oil flows hasn't actually begun from the Strait of Hormuz, which is a massive problem, and oil prices have rallied back to over $100 a barrel. And if this continues, then the impact could get far worse as we go through 2026.
So, David, we've got two reasons to expect worse inflation to come. One is that things didn't end at the end of March, and we don't know if and when they will end. The other is that flow through. What sort of impact are we likely to see? We've seen all sorts of things. Plumbing suppliers have added 35% to their prices. Coles has just increased the price of milk.
Basically, the indirect effects are roughly calculated as about another 1.5% through things like cost of freight, groceries. That feeds through over a number of months. So, yeah, if petrol prices stay where they are, that's going to feed through. It really comes down to the war, because if the war ends and oil prices drop back down again soon, then even that lagged effect, you know, the central bank can look through. They'll say, okay, yes, that's a flow through of what the war was. But, you know, again, we're in the hands of the gods here in terms of how long the war does last. And that's the debate at the moment, is how long it will last. And there will be a tipping point at some point, because at the moment the RBA is worried about the inflationary effects. But I mean, if oil prices go a lot higher and there is a risk of a recession, because consumer spending will take a hit, then, there may be an inflection point where they do actually start to worry about the downside risk of the economy and maybe not raise rates more. So you don't want to, keep raising rates in the face of a potential recession, because that in and of itself will help take the edge off non-energy prices.
Deanna, an awful lot will depend on bargaining power. Mm. I ask that because Coles and Woolworths, they're reporting this week, are resisting attempts from all manner of suppliers to increase their charges, baked beans, all sorts of things. Meanwhile, the Fair Work Commission has directed Coles, Woolworths and the other users of trucking companies to adjust the prices they pay every fortnight to ensure truckers can recover the increased costs of fuel. Well, what happens to us, customers, depend really on who's squeezed and who's not?
It will. And I guess what I'm concerned about is the repeat of what we saw after the pandemic, where an initial supply chain issue became much more than just a transitory inflation problem. It became an entrenched inflation problem that took about 2 years to get under control. And we had headline inflation rates of about 8% or so and core measures of 6%. And we really want to avoid that, given that we went through a period of significant rate hikes to get inflation down and consumers had to do the heavy lifting there. But what I'm concerned about is that our starting point for the economy is in a pretty decent shape. So if consumers and businesses are going to be able to absorb these fuel surcharges, or whatever you're going to call it, these price increases that are going to be passed on, and that flows through into many parts of industries, that could create a much bigger headache for them if we are to see these price rises being absorbed in the economy. And I think that the economy probably can absorb some of these price increases, because consumers are in a pretty decent shape. Income growth has been good.
Do you mean we can absorb them?
Well, we don't necessarily want to absorb them, but our wealth situation and our income positions at the moment probably mean that we can absorb them.
I guess when you mean absorb is like businesses can pass on the price increases and consumers can wear it. I mean, someone somewhere has got to pay this. It either comes out of corporate profits or they pass it on to consumers and it comes out of real incomes because prices go up.
Yeah.
How bad was inflation before all this, David? How worrying was it for the Reserve Bank before February 28?
We had an issue of the economy rebounding and very quickly that feeding through to inflation even before the war. So the RBA was on track to raise rates at least once, probably twice this year, even before, the bombs started dropping in Iran. And basically the economy has been pretty solid. So businesses and households have bargaining power. Businesses probably perceive they have pricing power. And households, given the unemployment rate is still relatively low, and you got the Fair Work Commission, generously offering wage increases around the place, feel that they have wage bargaining power. So when both businesses and households think that they can put up their prices and wages, it's a heady mix into which a inflation shock, such as what we're getting at the moment, feeds in. So that's why the RBA is worried. We already had an inflation problem. Is worried that it gets embedded into inflation expectations and round robin of wage and price increases.
This is the spiral. This is what spiral we had in the 1970s, the upward spiral.
Yeah, and we got a little bit of that in 22 as well. There was an inflation expectation. It says, we'll jack up our prices because, we can pass on the price increases. And then you had, workers looking to, raise their wages as well. So there was a risk of that getting embedded. Again, the 70s was an example where it was an inflation shock from petrol, but it did get embedded into the system and it took a decade or so to get it out of the system. And so that's what we, what we want to avoid is that that embedding of basically self-defeating wage and price increases. No one wins, but the overall inflation rate is higher than we would like it to be.
That would depend on expectations. What do we know, Deanna, about expectations? Are they becoming unmoored, or are they set to become unmoored? Most people listening would have grown up basically having the mental model most of us have had for the past 30 years, which is that prices don't move much. 2 to 3%, that rounds to about nothing. You don't need to rush to the shops because prices are going to increase quickly. Is that becoming unmoored?
What we know from the last 1 or 2 months of inflation expectations data is that consumers are not great at forecasting inflation, but I guess some can say neither are economists. And they look at petrol prices, and then they project that to the future, demand those high wages.
Yeah, if I could jump in, and we do get effectively two measures of inflation. We get the short-run measure, what consumers think inflation will be over the next year or so, and then we get these longer-term measures, the 5 to 10 year expectation. They tend not to jump around too much, and at this stage they are still contained and anchored, but the longer inflation stays higher, the more likely those drift up. And so that's the debate that the RBA has to face. You know, how long can they wait for inflation to come back down?
Deanna, the Fair Work Commission is in the middle of considering whether to grant a big increase or a small increase in award wages. It'll do that from July. It does that every year. As you said, David, it's also increased a number of other wages for childcare workers and so on, quite separately to that. Last year, with inflation subsiding, it decided to be generous. It awarded 3.5%. declaring, in the words of its president, Adam Harcher,
"The Reserve Bank's assessment that inflation has sustainably returned to its target range of 2 to 3% indicates that this inflationary episode is now over."
That hasn't aged well. I think we can say this year will be a much tougher decision. What do you think the Fair Work Commission will do, and what do you think it should do?
This is a really difficult one, and Jim Chalmers came out recently, and I think it was Chalmers, someone from the government came out and said that they think that Fair Work Commission should award a rate of the wage increase close to the current rate of inflation, or around 4% or so. I think that would be a mistake, and that is hard, I guess, to explain to the population, because
real wage cuts are hard to explain. I get that.
You don't want to say to people you shouldn't be compensated for doing your job, but the best outcome that economists, I think, would argue for is to see an increase in award, minimum wage and EBAs at the same rate as we had last year, so about 3.5%.
Which is less than inflation.
Well, it's less than headline inflation, but it's not less than trim mean inflation. Now, it's not likely that we're going to get headline inflation continuing to run at 4.6% or 5%. I mean, you have to make an assumption about the war at some stage, and I think you can see that both sides are quite constrained at the moment. So it is likely that we will see oil prices get down at some stage this year, because we can't keep the current situation going for much longer. So we shouldn't be expecting inflation to be running at over 4%. I think the more normal pace of inflation that's going to be is going to be between 3 and 3.5%. So that's the rate of wages that I think should be awarded for the most sustainable outcome for the economy.
Your message for the most sustainable outcome is that we're not going to be fully compensated, or we should not be fully compensated for the increase in inflation we've got. It's a question of where the pain is spread. Here on The Economy Stupid on ABC Radio National with me, Peter Martin. Our guests this week, inflation and Reserve Bank soothsayers at the AMP and Beta Shares, Deanna Messina and David Bassanese. David, when the Reserve Bank's Monetary Policy Board meets next week, it'll have to also take into account our state of mind. It'd be fair to say it's becoming fragile. Ask Australians about their fears of rising unemployment, as Westpac and the Melbourne Institute have just done, and they'll tell you they're the worst since the outbreak of COVID. Now, we don't have rising unemployment yet, but that's the expectation. Westpac's overall measure of consumer confidence has fallen the most since the outbreak of COVID, and business confidence has collapsed by more than it did during the global financial crisis. Given how we're feeling, is this a really bad time, a dangerous time, to be increasing interest rates further?
Well, I think the drop in confidence is reflecting that fear of the interest rate increase. And the interest rate increase is because the RBA, you know, unfortunately, does want to slow the economy. It does feel that we are operating above our productive capacity, and there's no there's no way to, you know, sugarcoat that. I mean, consumer confidence is at sort of recessionary levels. Now, I don't think we're going to get a recession, but we're going to get a period of below trend growth, as it's called, and the unemployment rate drifting up a little. So I think there's obviously a reaction. But yeah, I mean, I think weak confidence is not surprising, and it is part and parcel of what the RBA is doing. It's taking the punch bowl away from the party. And people are not going to be happy about that.
Neither of you are sugarcoating this. Diana, what's your feeling about feelings on the board? The last decision was a split decision, the decision to increase interest rates for the second month in a row. 4 voted one way, 5 voted the other. What do you think the board is thinking?
Well, I'd hope that the board is split again when it meets next week. We want to see rigorous discussion. And it's not an easy situation that the RBA finds itself in, because as much as we don't want to be hiking interest rates into an oil price shock where we're seeing a doubling in oil prices, at the same time, we know that we have this inflation problem in Australia. So how do we manage both sides, not send the economy into a downturn or a recession, as you were mentioning, but to get inflation down? So, I mean, it's really hard to know how the board's thinking, because the board members are not yet talking in public about their own vibes, I guess, or their inclinations for raising rates or holding them steady, although that is to come. Some of the external board members are going to be speaking more in coming months. I do get the sense, though, that the RBA itself is quite hawkish. And when economists talk about hawkish, it basically means that they're worried about the inflation outlook. And they're really honing in on getting to 2.5% inflation. Anything even close to 3 is just not good enough. And when I put that lens on, I think they're going to be pushing the idea that we need to be hiking rates more. Whether we get 1 or 2 more, I think that the economy can manage another 1 or 2 rate hikes. But if we saw rates above 5%, I think that would be a real problem for the Australian economy.
Where are they now?
They're at 4.1% at the moment. We're likely to get to 4.35% next week.
So these 10 rate hikes that we had, 10 consecutive rate hikes, there are, I think, 13 or so all in all, the last time inflation got that high, that is not at all likely, in part because rates are already higher than they were then. They're basically at zero then.
Yeah, that period of high inflation after the pandemic was quite prolonged. We didn't get on top of it quickly enough. There was also so much going on in terms of closed borders and then reopening and all this revenge spending. We had all this built up savings. We had all these payments from the government. We had interest rates going to zero. We don't have all of these tailwinds for consumers at the moment. So it's hard to see inflation picking back up to those levels. But what we want to avoid is sort of oil seeping into so many different parts of the economy where it creates an inflation problem. And that's what the RBA is trying to avoid.
David, can you conceive of a way in which the board says next Tuesday, we don't like what the war is doing to inflation and what it's about to do, but we're worried about what it's doing to Australians. We're going to step back a while, assess the damage, see how things develop.
Look, it's definitely a possibility. Yeah, a rate rise next week is certainly not a done deal. I think even the financial markets today are saying it's a 50-60% chance. In fact, the markets have reduced the odds of a rate hike next week following the CPI. The CPI came out today. It was actually a little bit better than what the market expected.
They were expecting 5%, not 4.6%.
Yeah, and again, the underlying measure, they were expecting 0.9 for the quarter and it was 0.8. So it was a little bit less than what the market expected. So it's not a done deal. And again, let's go back to March, where it was a split decision and some board members were saying, you know, let's hold off in raising rates. So maybe some would argue, well, you know what, we did bring forward the May rate rise and we did it in March, so we don't need to go again in May. So I think that's definitely a possibility. End of the day, the way I look at it is, before the war, the RBA probably had 2 rate rises in mind for this year, given, again, we had an inflation problem before the war began. And then the war's come along and added to petrol price inflation. And it's basically, I think, penciled in at least 1 extra rate rise. So I think even though they did raise rates in March, which was probably earlier than what they initially thought they'd do, I think that was a war effect, but they're still on track, I think, to raise rates in May. But certainly not a done deal. It's going to be fascinating to see how it plays out and what the statement will be.
Diana, the Reserve Bank is required, as well as to look after price stability, to maintain full employment. Can you see a time coming where it has to actually balance those two goals? At the moment, unemployment's low, but if it starts increasing, or it might have to hold back on its goal of returning inflation to where it wants it to be.
I think it would need to be a very steep increase in the unemployment rate for it to be more concerned about the labour market. Michelle
Bullock
was asked.
What's a steep increase?
A steep increase, I would say, for currently at 4.3, something over 5%. So an unemployment rate with a 5 in front of it. Michelle Bullock was asked at the last press conference if you had to get, I'm rewording it here, if you had to get inflation down and the only way to do that was a recession, would you do that? And basically the answer was yes. So the RBA is really focusing on getting inflation to 2.5%, even if that means to destroy jobs growth along the way. I mean, we had been thinking that the unemployment rate should have been higher than where it is right now for a while. We had been expecting it to get to 4.5% 6 months ago, and the resilience of the labour market has been extraordinary. A lot of that has been down to government-related jobs. I mean, non-market sector jobs have accounted for about 90% of jobs growth in the last 12 months, whereas the market sector has had flat jobs growth.
These aren't necessarily government jobs. These are in the caring sector that the government funds them.
That's right.
A lot of people in these jobs aren't paid by the government. They're funded by the government.
Not necessarily a direct government employee, but it could be funds that are still paid for by government subsidies, like NDIS, for example. You're still getting some sort of flow through there from government payments, or something like private health, where you may still be getting some sort of backing again from the government. So yes, it's not technically public sector jobs, but a lot of that is money related to the public service. So if we are to see some of that public sector jobs growth start to moderate, which I think we will based on what we're likely to get out of the budget in a few weeks' time, then the labour market is naturally going to slow anyways. And I think that that will help to reduce inflation. I am still optimistic about the outlook for inflation. Yes, the war throws in some headwinds at the moment, but I think that the broader state of the economy should see inflation slow this time next year.
David, how high might unemployment have to rise? How high, I guess, might the Reserve Bank have to push it in order to get inflation back to the target? And unless it, decided to be squeamish, I suppose, and balance those objectives.
I don't think it needs to get a lot higher. I mean, look, if they raise rates next week, that will mean they will have undone the 3 rate cuts that we got last year. So rates will be back to where they were after the last rate hike cycle, which was enough to slow growth through 23, 24 into 25. Like the middle of 24, we had growth sub 1%. So I think that level of rates will be enough to take the edge off growth. I think the unemployment rate probably will drift up. I don't think it'll hit 5%, but probably 4.5% at a minimum, maybe just a touch higher. And look, a point I also want to make, the underlying measure of inflation, the trim mean measure, may get lost in the headlines today about petrol prices and whatnot, but it has, again, glacially, but nonetheless slowed. In the September quarter, the quarterly increase is 1%, December quarter 0.9%, and even with a 30% increase in petrol prices in the month of March, the quarterly number was 0.8%. So we are seeing a deceleration in underlying inflation. So I think the RBA will take some heart from that, not maybe enough to rule out at least one more rate rise, but there is some good news if you dig deep enough into these numbers.
Can I ask each of you, finally, on this, your guesses? I'm sorry to put you on the spot, but that's your job. Deanna, first, how high is inflation likely to peak? The Treasurer said it would go up, and it let us know the Treasury's forecast in the budget due in only 2 weeks now. How high is unemployment likely to peak? And what likelihood do you think there is that we'll get zero economic growth, that we'll move toward a recession?
So on inflation, I mean, there's multiple measures that we can actually point to, headline or trim mean. For the headline, we think the annual rate's going to peak at just over 5%. For the trim mean, we think it'll be more like 4%, or just under 4% actually, for the June quarter. The unemployment rate, we think, can get to about 4.6 or 4.7% in 12 months' time and peak at that level. As for the risk of a recession, we have revised down our growth forecast because we've now had the impact of 2 rate hikes, the 30% increase to oil prices, which is effectively worth about 1 and a bit rate hike. So on my calculations, the average consumer with a mortgage in Australia, the mortgage of sub 700K is worse off by about $300 or so a month. So that hit to consumers is real. We are going to see consumer spending slow, but I think the risk of a recession is still low. I'd say it's probably a 20 or 25% chance. Our growth forecasts are about 1.5% in 12 months' time.
Which is low, but not zero.
It's low, but, you know, if at the moment we're growing at 2% and that's sort of the best that we can do right now, 1.5% isn't too bad.
David, what are you expecting?
Look, I would broadly agree with those numbers. I mean, I've got inflation. Yeah, inflation, look, we're close to a peak. I mean, June quarter is probably going to be the peak of inflation. Again, assuming the war, you know, Donald Trump and Iran do cut a deal and oil prices are close to a peak as well. But yeah, I think the unemployment rate, look, somewhere between 4.5 and 5, but yeah, 4.6, 4.7 on the unemployment rate probably later this year. And what is the probability of recession? It really comes down to those inflation numbers. If inflation does peak in June, absolutely no reason to have a recession. If businesses and consumers, you know, both start squabbling over the income split and we get price and wage pressures going up, then the RBA is going to have to say, you know what, everyone needs a cold shower here and we're going to have to raise rates and just reduce that risk of basically self-defeating wage and price increases of, you know, 3 to 4% continuing. So it's, yeah, it comes down to that. But, yeah, I think that won't happen. I think we are already seeing underlying inflation decelerate even in the face of that oil price increase.
Both of you are suggesting a sort of Goldilocks sort of outcome, but pain to get there and pain which it looks as if will be widely spread. Can I ask each of you very briefly, as we usually do on the program, whether there's anything else of note to look out for in the days and weeks ahead? Deanna?
I mean, for me, it's the number of ships that are flowing through the Strait of Hormuz. I track this every single day. It sort of ticked up when we had the ceasefire announcement and it's gone back down again. We really need to see the resumption of oil again.
Yeah, I mean, that's obviously the absolutely critical issue here is can they resolve the impasse between the two and the Strait reopen? You mentioned the Fair Work Commission, the proclivity to offer, you know, a continued pretty decent wage increases at a time when probably real incomes somewhere has to, you know, have a real income cut here in the face of inflation going up. So I think that's an interesting domestic issue is to what extent wages, particularly through areas like the Fair Work Commission, basically embed a higher level of costs, you know, over the next few months.
You will get mail, David Bassanese, Chief Economist at Beta Shares, Deanna Messina, Deputy Chief Economist at AMP. Thank you so much for speaking to us.
Great to be with you, Peter.
Thank you so much.
And thank you for listening. You can find our episodes on the ABC Listen app or on ABC Radio National Thursdays and now Saturday morning as well. If you have any thoughts or questions or comments, no economic question is stupid, you can email us. Ron has done that via the economy.stupid@abc.net.au about last week's program. He asks, who really benefits when global gas prices spike? Australian taxpayers? Australian consumers? Or the gas companies? Well, certainly not Australian consumers, I think we could say, Ron. For taxpayers, is some increase, even though, as we were discussing, the petroleum resource rent tax takes in very little money at the moment. There'll be an increase in company tax, although some of the gas companies don't at this moment pay company tax. So I think the answer is broadly the companies, Ron, although in due course, as we said, the gas tax should raise a lot of money. Thanks to producer Hayley Crane. I'm Peter Martin. We'll see you next week.
Listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.